From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. It is Thursday, January 7th, 2016. I am your host, Al Martin. And boy, oh boy, do we have a doozy of a show in store for all of you out there. On today's Current Sports, we will break down, of course, last night's Baseball Hall of Fame announcement as two of the world's biggest baseball superstars, especially when you look at the 90s era, will be inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame this summer. Find out who in just a minute. We will also be breaking down news that was released yesterday concerning Detroit Lions wide receiver Calvin Johnson. Folks, Megatron is thinking about retirement. Say it ain't so. Are you kidding me? Kind of reminds me of another Lions great who decided to call it quits back in the day a little bit too early. Now, again, Calvin Johnson has not said he's retiring, but at the same time, he is contemplating it. I'm getting flashbacks of another big name. You'll find out who that name is in just a sec as well. We will also be chatting with Jay Sarkar, who is the new WLNS TV6 sports reporter and weekend anchor. You'll get to hear from Jay about his journey to right here in mid-Michigan. And to wrap up the show, during our last segment, we will talk about Trevor Manuel transferring and give you a bit of a preview for that Michigan State and Illinois game that will be taking place tonight at 9 p.m. at the Breslin. But hey, you know what's next. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners for this Thursday, January 7th. Folks, we start with news concerning the MSU women's basketball team. All three Michigan State women's basketball signees from the Spartans 2016-17 class were named McDonald's All-American Game nominees. Madrika Cook from Muskegon, Michigan, Nia Holly, Montanoka, Minnesota, and Taryn McCutcheon from Parksville, West Virginia, all earned nominations for the prominent event. Now, the three players are currently ranked number 11 by ESPN Hoop Girls. The final rosters for the 24 girls and 24 boys selected for the Mickey D's games will be announced on January 17th. Michigan State All-American offensive tackle Jack Conklin, who started 38 of 39 career games, will forego his senior season and enter the 2016 National Football League draft. As a three-year starter, Conklin helped the Spartans to a combined record of 36-5, including back-to-back bowl victories over Stanford in the 2014 Rose Bowl and Baylor in the 2015 Cotton Bowl Classic, as well as an appearance in the 2015 College Football Playoff semifinal, of course, against Alabama. The deadline for underclassmen to declare themselves eligible for the 2016 NFL Draft is Monday, January 18th. The 14-1 MSU men's basketball team hopes to make it two straight wins tonight when they play host to the Illinois Fighting Illini at the Breslin Center. Tip-off is set for 9 p.m. They are coming off a win against Minnesota on the road 5 days ago. Star player Denzel Valentine is expected to miss his fourth straight game, but there is light at the end of the tunnel. Hopeful for a return this Sunday at Penn State. And speaking of Penn State, the MSU women's basketball team will be in Pennsylvania tonight, also looking to make it back-to-back wins as they take on the Nittany Lions. Tip time for them is set for 7 p.m. The Spartans are 10-3, 1-1 in the Big Ten. They have won 6 of their last 7 games. ESPN's College Game Day will visit East Lansing on January 23rd when Michigan State hosts Maryland. This will be the fourth time Michigan State has hosted College Game Day and marks the Spartans' 8th appearance overall, both of which rank first among Big Ten programs. Tip-off for MSU Maryland is yet to be determined. Michigan State first hosted Game Day on February 24, 2007, with Michigan State defeating Indiana 66-58. Trevor Manuel, the 2015 Lansing Everett graduate and Oregon freshman, asked to be released from his scholarship and intends to transfer. Oregon Live reported that on Tuesday. Oregon coach Dana Altman said that he'd like Manuel to remain with the program, but he believes he will transfer, saying, quote, "The door is always open. I don't want him to leave. Obviously, I think he's got a lot of upside, but everybody's got to do what they've got to do." Manuel, a 6'9" forward, was a four-star recruit and picked Oregon over finalist Michigan State, Florida, and USC. Maybe we'll see him in the Spartan uniform. Who knows? All right, Detroit Lions wide receiver Calvin Johnson is contemplating retirement. A source told that to ESPN's Ed Werder that Johnson warned his mother a few days ago that he wasn't sure if he'll continue to play. Johnson, who is 30 and just completed his ninth NFL season, released a statement Wednesday through the Lions saying he is, quote, "evaluating options for my future. I would expect to have a decision regarding this matter in the not-too-distant future." Mind-boggling stuff there. Reggie Jackson's sparkling play in the fourth quarter carried the Detroit Pistons to their latest strong finish. The 6'3" guard, who shined for three seasons at Boston College before turning pro in 2011, scored 9 of his 24 points in the final period, and the D rallied for a 99-94 win over the Boston Celtics last night. And the Detroit Red Wings, they travel to take on the San Jose Sharks. Puck drop is set for 10:30 p.m. And Ken Griffey Jr. and Mike Piazza, two of the most prolific sluggers of the high-scoring 90s, were elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame Wednesday. Pretty cool stuff. Well, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Folks, again, if you want to weigh in on today's show, we'll be taking your calls later at 517-355-9527. Weigh in at facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. Let's start the show.
Our first new Hall of Famer set a standard behind the plate, hitting for power and average, launching 427 home runs, including a record 396 as a catcher, posted a .308 lifetime batting average, including one 200 hit season in 1997, when he became the first player who was primarily a catcher to reach the 200 hit mark. Incredibly durable behind the plate, leading the National League in putouts four times and assists twice. Drove in 1,335 runs, a 12-time All-Star, winning MVP honors in his hometown, Philly, in 1996. He earned 10 Silver Slugger Awards. He was the 1993 Rookie of the Year. From Norristown, Pennsylvania, drafted in 1988 in the 62nd round, the 1,390th pick overall. Today, he calls Cooperstown home. Mike Piazza, welcome to the Hall of Fame. Our second and final member of the Hall of Fame, new this year, parlayed a strong baseball gene pool and true five-tool ability over 22 seasons into a Hall of Fame career. With his picture-perfect left-handed swing, he blasted 630 home runs, good for sixth all-time, still ranks 13th overall in total bases, 15th in runs batted in. He had a stretch of 40 home run seasons in 7 of 8 years, homered in a record tying 8 straight games in 1993, and led the American League in home runs 3 times overall. 13-time All-Star Brian, winning game MVP honors in 1992, 10 American League Gold Glove Awards consecutively, the 1997 American League Most Valuable Player. Like the great Stan Musial, he's from Denora, Pennsylvania. The first pick in the 1987 draft, he received more than 99% of the votes on ballots cast, a record for percentage. Ken Griffey Jr., welcome to the Hall of Fame.
Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. Again, folks, happy Thursday. It is Thursday, January 7th. 2016. I'm still getting used to saying that, okay? I feel so, you know, the urge comes to say 2015 so bad, but I keep forgetting. It's a new year, folks. It's a new year. Hopefully the new year has been treating you right so far. Again, it's only 7 days into the new year, but again, folks, it's so glad anytime I get to, you know, sit behind this mic and talk to you all. And what you just heard was, of course, last night's announcement of course, the newest class that will be enshrined into baseball's most coveted arena, that being the Baseball Hall of Fame. Such an elongated intro, as of course each and every accomplishment of the, you know, the two respective individuals was announced. But very, very cool stuff. And I think, you know, nothing really surprised many people last night other than a few areas when it comes to percentage of votes from other players. And I'm going to hit that in just a second. But I want to say congratulations to, of course, Ken Griffey Jr. and Mike Piazza, who will be inducted this summer. Very well deserving when you look at what those two individuals did throughout their careers. Before I move along and elaborate more on Griffey and Piazza, I want to remind you all that, hey, it is Thursday. Tonight, you want to make sure that you are glued to your television set at 10:30 p.m. on WKAR-TV. As Current Sports TV hits the airwaves, I will be chatting with Michigan State running back great from 2009 to 2011. His name is Edwin Baker. A very cool episode tonight, seeing as though we shot the entire introduction of tonight's Current Sports TV out in Dallas, Texas. That's right, of course, we made Dallas, Texas our home last week covering the Cotton Bowl as Michigan State were rolled over by Alabama at AT&T Stadium. But at the same time, it was such a great atmosphere. It was great to see the countless Spartan fans who made the trip down there. And we decided to film the entire intro of tonight's show down in Dallas. In an interesting sports twist that not only encompasses the MSU football team, but also, of course, the assassination of John F. Kennedy. I shared my thoughts on Dallas early on this week as it was a bit of an eerie feeling as current sports engineer Isaac Constance and myself decided to go to, of course, Dealey Plaza and see what used to be the Texas School Book Depository and to see that road where JFK was assassinated. A very eerie feeling, and I shoot part of the show there. And again, give a sports twist that sort of relates to Michigan State. So you do not want to miss it. Edwin Baker, he's going to give some great insight as to his thoughts, his overall perceptions of what occurred this year for the Michigan State football team and what Coach Mark D'Antonio has done throughout his tenure as the head coach of this program, and even talk about his own playing career from, of course, that time back in 2009 to 2011, where Edwin was a running back. He played along the likes of guys like Javon Ringer and Le'Veon Bell, actually even sandwiched between those two running back greats. He'll even talk about his NFL career, in which he bounced around a lot, to say the least. And he'll also talk about financial stability and always having a plan B, even when you're in the league making thousands, if not millions, of bucks. So you don't want to miss that. Again, set your DVRs if that's a bit too late for you. 10:30 p.m. on WKAR-TV. That's Current Sports TV with guest Edwin Baker. And one extended headliner for you guys that I didn't mention to start the show. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they fired coach Lovie Smith last night, dismissing him after two seasons and giving him only one with number one overall draft pick Jameis Winston behind center. Overall, Smith went 8-24 over 2 years in charge of the team, 6-10 this past season, and a move in which shocked everybody. I mean, no one saw this move coming. Even the experts and the certain reporters who have the shoe in and the know-all when it comes to certain sources in the league, they didn't see this coming. Here's a direct quote from Buccaneers co-chairman Joel Glazer. He said in a statement, quote, "After careful consideration, we inform Lovie that we have decided to make a change. I want to thank Lovie for his hard work and dedication to the Buccaneers during his time here." Now, the Buccaneers will hold a news conference this afternoon to discuss Smith's dismissal. And you better believe I'm very intrigued as to what they have to say as to why they let go of Lovie. And also, a big congratulations to Jack Conklin. That news broke on our show, actually during the show yesterday to start it. Again, Jack Conklin, Michigan State All-American offensive tackle, Jack Conklin, who started 38 of 39 career games, he will forgo his senior season and enter the 2016 NFL Draft. A very cool story when concerning Jack, because, folks, we are talking about a walk-on. This was a walk-on. And again, he helps the Spartans to a combined record of 36-5, including back-to-back vote victories. Again, he gets the team. You know, he's a big component of getting the team to the college football semis this year, in which Michigan State fell to Alabama. Just an unbelievable player. This is a walk-on who made his presence known. And again, Jack is a junior, and he has decided to forego his senior season to make that leap into the NFL. And I always say, if your draft stock is there, and again, this is football, a very physical game, injuries can come out of nowhere. They can come out of nowhere. This is sports. You're not guaranteed your next game. Heck, you're not guaranteed your next practice. So if you are slated to be a high draft pick, and if your draft stock is high, can you blame a kid for saying, hey, I'm chucking up the deuces, I'm saying bye-bye to college, and I'm trying to make moolah right now? That's just simple as it is. So I want to give a congratulations to Jack Conklin as well. But let's talk about the Major League Baseball announcement last night on the MLB Network of Ken Griffey Jr. and Mike Piazza being announced, these two players being announced that they would be inducted into, again, baseball's most coveted arena, the Baseball Hall of Fame. It's every kid's dream, whoever picks up a baseball bat, whoever picks up a baseball when they're young, and they have that dream of playing in the majors and becoming a big star. It's every kid's dream to eventually grace the Hall of Fame. It is the most prestigious hall in all of North American sports, and now they add two more names to it this summer, Ken Griffey Jr. and Mike Piazza. And I'm always intrigued as to where the respective individuals who are being inducted into the hall, where they were when they got the call, what was their overall reaction. And it was a very cool moment because I was watching SportsCenter on ESPN last night, and SportsCenter actually had exclusive footage of Griffey sitting in his kitchen as he received the call that he would be inducted into the hall. Check out this.
Ken Griffey, please.
This is him.
Hey, Junior, this is Jack O'Connell with the Baseball Writers Association in New York.
Hello, how are
you? I'm calling to tell you that the writers have elected you to the National Baseball Hall of Fame.
Thank you. Thank you.
Listen, Junior, not only that, you made history in this election.
Yes,
had 440 voters, and you were on 437 ballots.
Yeah.
Reality and the history of the voting.
Okay. Now I'm a little nervous now.
How cool was that, right? If you guys haven't seen that, you can find it with a quick Google. But after the camera pan from Griffey, and, you know, he's leaning over, you know, the table in his kitchen as he puts the phone on speakerphone, and he talks to the representative from the hall as the representative tells him that he will be inducted into the Hall of Fame this summer. After you see that shot, it pans to his family, and they are absolutely losing their minds. I mean, very, very cool stuff. And you heard, you know, Griffey's reaction was kind of like, you know, kind of the reaction that he's had all of his career. You know, he's had this kind of a reputation of not being, you know, too privy to the media. But at the same time, he's a very charismatic and very intelligent guy. So, you know, his reaction was kind of nonchalant. Like he knew he was going in. I mean, everyone knew that Ken Griffey Jr. was going to be a lock in his very first year of eligibility. Again, folks, he got 437 of the 440 votes. Only three individuals did not have Ken Griffey Jr. on their ballot. And you better believe, those three individuals who did not have Griffey on their ballot, their names are going to be blowing up very, very soon. I don't know when, but whenever we find out who these individuals are, who are these three guys or individuals, period, who knows if it's a guy or a girl, who knows? Whoever they are going to be put on full blast. Because when you look at what Ken Griffey Jr. did throughout his baseball career, I mean, how can you not have him on your ballot? It's really unbelievable. Now, of course, you know, Ken Griffey Jr., when you look at his overall career, of course, he's the son of George Kenneth Griffey, who was a member of the famed Big Red Machine for the Cincinnati Reds. They won the World Series in 75, 76, excuse me. Again, he was, he was 18 years old when King Griffey Jr. was picked number one overall in the MLB draft back in 1987. And a lot of people don't even know this, that Griffey was such a great athlete when he was young, and he not only was a good baseball player, but he had Division I offers as a running back for his high school football team in Cincinnati at Archbishop Moeller. He was unbelievable. I mean, I don't know if you guys have seen footage of King Griffey Jr. when he played football back in high school, but oh my goodness, he was good, folks. He was good, but I think he chose the right route with baseball, don't you think? Now, many believe that Griffey had the smoothest swing in baseball history. Many people call it, quote-unquote, textbook. I mean, just a smooth, you know, he was a lefty, so he just a smooth stride as the bat moved across the front of the plate. Unbelievable. I mean, again, it was textbook. It was a thing of beauty to watch Ken Griffey swing the baseball bat. Now, looking at his numbers, an overall batting average of .284. He had 2,781 hits. He hit 630 home runs. He knocked in, this is RBIs here, 1,836 runs batted in. Those numbers alone are just sick. That just madness, right? And then you look at his overall accolades. He was a 13-time All-Star. He was an AL MVP back in 1997. He was a 10-time Gold Glove Award winner from 1990 to 1999. A 7-time Silver Slugger Award winner. An MLB All-Star Game MVP back in 1992. He was the NL Comeback Player of the Year, if you remember, during the late times of his career when he bought out for the Reds back in 2005. Which was only, like 11 years ago. Crazy stuff. Then you look at a 4-time home run leader, an AL RBI leader back in 1997, 3-time home run derby champion, and then, you know, Reds Hall of Fame, the Mariners Hall of Fame, MLB All-Century Team. I mean, he was absolutely unbelievable. And even if you go back and look at, you know, Griffey Jr.'s, you know, very first game as a Mariner, again, we're talking about this is a 19-year-old kid when he finally gets to, you know, when he plays his first major league game for Seattle. Folks, the first pitch he saw in his career was a home run. Can you believe that? I mean, just mind-blowing numbers. Again, he was so confident. He was so charismatic. But, you know, there's another side to King Griffey Jr. that I also admire, because this is a man who also had his fair share of demons, just like any human being. And he's not shy in letting it be known today, because he does a lot of charitable endeavors now, you know, that of course he's retired from the game. In 2008, Griffey, he released a series of charity wines to support the Ken Griffey Jr. Family Foundation, which is a fund that supports several causes, including the Boys and Girls Clubs of America and several children's hospitals across the U.S. He was also an honorary co-chairman of the AOPA Foundation's Hat in the Ring Society, which is a charitable organization that promotes aviation safety and education. So this is a guy who also realized that it's important to give back. It's important to talk to young minds who are the future of our nation and the future of our world, and to make sure that they are on the straight and narrow. Because again, Griffey is a guy who battled his fair share of demons. I don't know if you guys remember this, but Griffey went through a very tough transition into being just an ordinary 18-year-old into a superstar in Major League Baseball. So much so that he actually even tried to take his life at the age of 18. In January 1988, again, at the age of 18, he attempted to commit suicide by swallowing 277 aspirin pills, but wound up in intensive care in Providence Hospital in Ohio. Griffey Jr. cited arguments with his father, Ken Griffey Sr., depression, and anger as reasons for his attempted suicide. On his failed attempt, Griffey Jr. stated, quote, "It seems like everyone was yelling at me in baseball. Then I came home, and everyone was yelling at me there. I got depressed. I got angry. I didn't want to live. He stated that he also previously contemplated taking his own life, but he had not acted until this incident, again, swallowing 277 aspirin pills. After Griffey swallowed the aspirin, his girlfriend's mother drove him to the hospital. While in intensive care, he ripped the IV from his arm in order to stop an argument between him and his father. Both Griffey Jr. and his father have stated that the incident changed their relationship, and there is now more understanding on both parts. What a journey, though, and this is quite the testimony. And Griffey Jr. uses this testimony when he goes on these philanthropic endeavors to talk to young children who are battling demons of their own, because we all know how crazy suicide rates are in America and in our world. Period. So I want to salute King Griffey Jr. because he is not only he was a great baseball player on the field, but he's an even better human being off of it. So congratulations to him. And then how about Mike Piazza? Huh? Miami-Dade Community College. He was drafted by the Dodgers in the 62nd round. The 62nd round, folks, of the 1988 MLB Amateur Draft as the 1,390th player picked overall. Are you kidding me? I mean, how many people, how many teams slept on Mike Piazza, who I think is the best hitting catcher of all time? And get this is a mind-blowing statistic. When I was doing some research this morning when looking up Mike Piazza's numbers, in the 10 seasons, again, 10 seasons, there have been 10 seasons that a catcher has had a 300 average and 30 homers. Get this. Out of those 10 seasons, Mike Piazza owns 5 of them. Are you kidding me? I mean, he owns 50%. Of the seasons that a catcher had both a 300 average and at least 30 home runs. That is mind-blowing, mind-blowing. And really, you know, looking at Mike, what he did throughout his career, I mean, it was just so jaw-dropping. No one could believe the type of an athlete that he was. That then, of course, the S word came up, steroids. Whether or not Mike Piazza, you know, is a steroid user. There was always suspicion concerning Mike Piazza. And the fact that Mike Piazza now will grace the Baseball Hall of Fame, it sends the message now that maybe there is a softening when it comes to, quote unquote, the steroid guys. That's what I refer to them in baseball, the steroid guys. Now, again, there was just a suspicion with Mike Piazza, and he went from a 69% to an 83% this year to now grace the Baseball Hall of Fame. How about Jeff Bagwell? He went from a 55% to a 71% this season. Again, also just suspicion when it comes to him, Bagwell being linked with performance-enhancing drugs or steroids. And, you know, looking at Roger Clemens, you know, a name that we brought up numerous times when having this conversation, whether or not, you know, he should be, you know, whether or not he should grace the Hall of Fame. And even Barry Bonds, you know, we've constantly talked about those two individuals. They made small spikes into the 40s. So when you evaluate this, I mean, wow, you know, this is really remarkable, because I think that there are some voters out there that are saying, you know what, I really believe that, you know, we need to get the best players of the generation in. And I think they're starting to soften the blow when it comes to individuals who are under suspicion of steroids, who have steroids linked to their respective careers. I really believe we're starting to see a turn here. And there are some out there that look at the situation when it comes to steroids in the game of baseball, and they believe that those individuals should not grace the Hall of Fame. A really old-school mentality, in my opinion. Again, this is my opinion. If you disagree with it, call in 517-355-9527. You know, and you hear this argument that those who used steroids and cheated affected the livelihood of those who didn't cheat, who did it the right way, who were clean. And those individuals who cheated the game affected those guys' salaries, how much they got paid. But what about the moolah that individuals like Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds, what about the money that those players brought in? What about the commercials? What about, you know, the tickets sold? You better believe that that money trickled down into the pockets of those individuals who may not have cheated. But it helped the overall product of the MLB and made it a hallmark in natural sporting society. So, hey, that's my thoughts on it. I think Bonds and Clemens need to be in the Hall of Fame. for what they did for baseball, for the fanfare they created within the game. Hey, if you disagree with me, though, call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I want to get your thoughts on King Griffey Jr. and Mike Piazza being inducted into the Hall of Fame this summer. And we'll also, you know, we've got a fourth slate here. Also, later on in the show, we'll be talking about Calvin Johnson, who, again, as mentioned in our current sports quick hit headliners, Calvin Johnson is contemplating retirement. Don't touch that dial, because when we come back, we will have those conversations and much more, as well as an in-studio chat with Jay Sarkar, who is the newest reporter at WLNS-TV6, the newest sports reporter and weekend anchor. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports.
Sundays at 4 o'clock, it's MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. This week, a conversation with MSU Admissions Director Jim Cotter.
You know, I hear people talk about the fact that these are the golden years at Michigan State. Well, these are very good years at Michigan State, but I like to think of them as the momentum years that we're going to build upon.
MSU Today every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock on AM 870 WKAR.
Hello again, I'm Marvin Almy. On the Next to the Point, Republicans in Congress have voted again to repeal Obamacare, even though it's providing new insurance coverage to millions of people. But at the same time, deductibles and out-of-pocket expenses are driving up medical debt. Is the Affordable Care Act living up to its name? Next time on To the Point from Public Radio International.
To the Point, this afternoon at 2 on AM 870 WKAR.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back, beautiful people. Again, you are locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. And yeah, we're taking your calls. Phone lines are open. I want to get your thoughts on, of course, Mike Piazza and King Griffey Jr. Their names being released on the MLB Network last night at 6 p.m. that they will be the newest members to grace the coveted shrine of the Baseball Hall of Fame. What do you think about it? Also, later on in the show, we are going to dive in the conversation concerning Calvin Megatron Johnson. Folks, after 9 seasons, Megatron is thinking about maybe hanging it up, calling it a career, retiring. Are you kidding me? Call in right now, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. In the meantime, our guest has just walked through the doors here at WKAR Studio S. His name is Jay Sarkar. He is the newest WLNS-TV6 sports reporter and weekend anchor. His first time on our airwaves chatting with moi, Jay. How you doing, brother?
I am doing great, Al. Thank you for having me on the show today. It's a joy to be here.
Without a doubt, man. I can't believe it's your first time here. It's your first time here on the show. Finally, we get you on, dude. First off, anytime I have a first-time guest, I treat it like an introduction to our listeners out there. I mean, you're new to the area. You're the newest reporter at WLNS-TV6, which is fam to me. That's extended fam. That's where I started my career. I want to talk about your road to WLNS-TV6, which actually, I believe, started at KSFY in South Dakota. Am I right?
You are correct. KSFY, the ABC affiliate in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I was out there for just shy of a year. Opportunity opened up with Uncle Fred to be able to come back a little bit closer to home for me. So, you know, came in at just the right time, and 24 years old, and I can write that I have a college football playoff on my reporting reel. You know, it's a good feeling.
Very cool stuff, right? Not many people can say that, Jay. Now, what was it like? I'm curious. What was it like out in South Dakota? I mean, weather-wise, I'm pretty sure it was like -5, right? -20, 30? What was it like?
Actually, the winter we had last winter out there was not as brutal as y'all had it here.
Really?
Less snow. Was windy because there's no trees to keep the wind at bay, but, okay. You know, it was kind of like that. But, you know, sports-wise, a little bit different. The thing that kind of throws it the most is Sioux Falls, where the station is. It's one of the major cities. They don't have either of the major colleges in the state.
Really?
Yes. University of South Dakota was an hour southwest, and South Dakota State University was about 50 minutes north.
So you guys did nothing on those schools then?
Well, we did cover them a lot, but, you know, that's where the curious letters FTP come into handy, because it's a bit of a commitment to get yourself up there to get to a game. I mean, football, of course, you had to. Basketball, here or there, just kind of depend. Then there were two Division II schools in town, the University of Sioux Falls and Augustana College, and we did a lot of day-to-day stuff with them.
How good were those schools at their respective sports?
University of Sioux Falls, they went 12-1 in the one season I covered them. They have a very hot shot coach who actually once upon a time opened for Tim McGraw in Nashville. I kid you not, former country singer.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, his name's Jed Stugart, one of the most fun interviews I have ever done.
I'm going to Google him right after this show. That's pretty interesting, dude.
Yeah, so, you know, you had that. Augustana, their basketball team was one of the top teams in Division II for a lot of last season. So, you know, there was definitely good quality stuff. Just, you know, me coming from Big Ten country, it was certainly different from what I was used to covering when I was in college.
But you know what I always tell, you know, because we have a lot of students that work directly with us here at Current Sports. And I always tell students, you know, when they first get in this industry, and they express that interest of getting in the industry. I always tell them, I mean, that first job, you may be in somewhere that no one has ever heard about, but you got to get that experience and you got to get that foot in the door, which is exactly what you did out there, right, Jay?
That is exactly what I did. Not all of us could have the pleasure that you did, Al, of being able to drive down Saginaw Highway to the studio and meet up with Uncle Fred.
I'm blessed, without a doubt, man. I always look at my road thus far, and I it's certainly been touched by a higher power, to say the least, all right? Now, Jay, I want to have some fun with you with this one, because, of course, it would be a crime for me not to bring this up, us being in Spartan territory, but you are from Ann Arbor, Michigan. You studied communication from the University of Michigan. And I gotta ask you, you know, when people find that out about you with your experience being here in Michigan, have you caught any flack from anybody about that?
Al, I caught flack the minute I walked in the door. And now, just to add to it, for good measure, I was born at U of M Hospital. So that was kind of predestined that I end up going there for college.
You think?
Yes.
Oh, but, my goodness.
But, you know, people, they like to give me flack about it, and I take it in jest. I understand where I am. And, you know, my friends at the same time, when I tell them, like, oh, you know, State's going to the playoff, they're like, oh, you know, that really makes us pretty salty. I'm like, guys, you can be salty about that as fans, but maybe be happy for your friend who's following the team to the Cotton Bowl getting to do all this great stuff, making Lane Kiffin make fun of Ohio State.
I saw that bite. Good question, by the way.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Now, Jay, again, going back to that, you know, I don't think a lot of people realize, and you and I had this conversation when we were out in Dallas, Texas at the Cotton Bowl, just kind of shooting it up and, you know, shooting the breeze. And a lot of people don't realize that at the end of the day, you are a journalist. No matter where you're from, you could be from I'm pretty sure I probably would catch some flack if I was a sports reporter out in Ann Arbor, and if those individuals knew that I had a background right here at Michigan State, I'm sure I would probably hear that same song, that same tune. But you're a journalist. Your job is to go out there and to cover these teams non-biasedly and to do a good job at it. And so far, you're knocking out the park, dude.
I appreciate that. But Al, I think what a lot of people don't recognize is up here at MSU, I should say, yourself, Justin Rose, other notable alumni, you guys have a proper journalism program. You are learning in classes what to do, proper ethics, getting hands-on training like you would hear at Current Sports or at Home TV or maybe even interning with us.
Right, exactly.
But yeah, you guys are getting that hands-on training. Me down at U of M, they don't have a traditional journalism degree. So I kind of had to be self-made in terms of doing Big Ten Network Student U, in terms of working at Wolf TV, which is the in-house TV network. I kind of had to figure out my own path when I decided I wanted to do this. So, you know, I'm not going to let my affiliation interfere with my journalism ethics.
That's right.
I know where I am. Michigan State's going to lead it off. But, you know, at the same time, let's say if we're talking 2006, for example, when MSU's in their last year under John L. Smith and Michigan State's 11-0 going into the Ohio State game, you kind of have to lead with Michigan. They're the story du jour. Now,
exactly.
It's been shifted since D'Antonio got here.
Right.
But, you know, you have to look at it in terms of balance.
That's right. Very, very true. You're preaching, brother. All right, folks. Again, if you're just now joining us here on WKR's Current Sports, we are chatting with Jay Sarkar, who is the newest WLNS TV6 sports reporter and weekend anchor. Now, Jay, again, before we transition into a few specifics within the sporting world, what made you want to become a sports reporter?
Well, Al, originally I thought I wanted to go into marketing, and that's what I actually thought I was going to go to business school for. But, you know, decided business school wasn't really my bag. And the two things I've always had a knack for, one, my inability to stop talking. And I know you know that from our interactions together at many MSU events. But secondly is I just my memory is like a steel trap, especially when it comes to sports. Like, you know, down, I'm sure I will get a tweet about this, but down Ann Arbor, I went to 83 straight Michigan games. And I can tell you, for the most part, who won, score, maybe a big play or two. And, you know, like, that's what takes up space in my brain.
Right, right.
So I think combining that and, you know, just having a knack for it after doing a lot of public speaking in middle school and high school, I just thought, hey, why not give it a try? And here I am.
Boom, shakalaka, right? Now, I want to get your thoughts. Of course, you and I, we're both at the Cotton Bowl out in Dallas, Texas last week, and we witnessed that, of course, that just trouncing. Alabama completely blowing out Michigan State in that game, ending Michigan State's hopes of possibly competing for a national championship. What has been, you know, because there's two sides to this conversation. When looking at, you know, the perception of how people view this Michigan State football season. On the other hand, you have, you know, the direct look at the Cotton Bowl game. A 38-0 blowout. People will say, hey, you got to the college football playoffs, but hey, again, Alabama fever, once again, it happened back in 2011. You can't get over that hump. Well, on the other hand, you have this perception that, hey, Michigan State won a Big Ten championship. They knocked off big dogs like Ohio State. They knocked off their rival in Michigan in a thrilling game that it was out in Ann Arbor. And they will say, hey, successful season. What do you think should be remembered about this Michigan State run to the college football playoff this season, Jay?
Well, Al, here's what I think about, and you know, we're going to be talking about this for years to come, is that this was a Michigan State team that was maybe 12 plays from either being completely undefeated or being 7-5. And, you know, but they are a team who, at the end of the day, when you go back and look at those box scores, they earn the wins. And that's all that matters when you look at it retrospectively. Mm-hmm. We could say, oh, this happened, or oh, this happened, or oh, what happens if Connor Cook plays in the Ohio State game, et cetera, et cetera. Now, with that, people are also going to remember how this season ended. Now, I think that that game reflects more on Alabama's ability and what kind of football factory Nick Saban has built down in Tuscaloosa than it does on what Mark D'Antonio's guys have achieved. Because we were in that locker room after the game, and, you know, guys like Joel Heath, Darian Harris, putting on the Spartan helmet for the final time. Mm-hmm. They were bummed, but they were very introspective. Like, I asked Joel Heath, I'm like, Joel, it's the last time you're wearing that jersey, but one game doesn't take away 4 years' worth of memories. And his response, absolutely not. We still won the Rose Bowl. We came back in the Cotton Bowl last year. And, you know, I mean, a lot of people think that that loss is going to slam the door on Michigan State football right now, especially when you look down what's happening in Ann Arbor. Columbus is still Columbus. But no,
it's a what have you done for me lately society.
Exactly.
Right? You know,
exactly.
And they're always going to remember what happened the most recently, you know?
No, and I think that Michigan State fans should look that 12-2 is nothing to shake your head at. It's the winningest senior class in program history. It's a magical run that had an unfortunate ending. But at the same time, you know, maybe if we asked a couple Spartan fans, what would they say if, let's say, you beat Alabama or you beat Oklahoma, they played Oklahoma, in the semifinal. How much worse is it if you get blown at 38-0 in the national championship game?
That's a good question as well. So I got to ask you, Jay, how big do you think is the gap between the current position of the Michigan State football team and an SEC powerhouse like Alabama? How big is that gap? Is it not as big as many people perceive it to be? Or do you agree that the proof is in the pudding? Just look at what Alabama has done the last two meetings between the Spartans. They still got some ways to go.
Well, I think here's the problem is that when Nick Saban took over at Alabama in 07, Alabama's a sleeping giant. They still had the name brand. They had Bear Bryant. Now, Michigan State, they had Duffy, they had Biggie, all these guys way back in the day. But when Mark D'Antonio came to Michigan State, even that Spartan dog defense of 2013 was mostly two or three-star recruits, was it not?
Yeah, it was.
So
yeah.
What you need is you need D'Antonio to get at least, you know, three or four more years here where he's competing with the Harbaughs and the Myers for the four and five-star guys, maybe even, you know, trying to start recruiting the South, that you need to get those guys who are not just coached up and playing at the top of themselves developmentally-wise, but you need the most talented guys coming in here, coaching them up, how you coach up your Bullo siblings, your John Reschke's, those kind of guys. You need to get them playing at the level of an A'shaun Robinson where if you rotate him out, there's a guy who, sure, he's a step behind A'shaun Robinson, but he's better than most Big Ten defensive ends.
Mm-hmm. Very, very true. And you know what? Talking about recruiting from a recruiting standpoint, I read the SI article, of course, in which they totally muffed Mark D'Antonio's name, called him Mike D'Antonio. And what's interesting to me is when you talk about recruiting, Michigan State in their upcoming recruiting class, in which they'll have freshmen, of course, next season, they have 10 five-star recruits coming. They had 7 the previous 2 years prior to this one. That's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. So, hey, what Mark D'Antonio has done with that two-star, three-star talent when they've come and developed that talent into what it is, just imagine what he can do with a five-star talent, right?
And that's, I think, exactly what needs to happen if he wants to keep competing for Big Ten championships, now at a point where, in the East at least, you're going to have Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State. I think all are capable of double-digit wins every year for the foreseeable future.
Right. Very, very true. Again, folks, we are chatting with the man, the myth, the legend, Jay Sarkar, WLNS-TV 6 sports reporter and weekend anchor. All right, Jay, are you surprised that Jack Conklin went early to the NFL?
You know, I am not, and I'm someone who's a proponent that these guys are in college. They're getting an excellent education, which I think is very important. But at the same time, if your draft stock's high enough, you got to go and get that money. Because
right.
You never know what. Look at Marcus Lattimore at South Carolina in 2012. He wasn't allowed to leave yet, I believe. I think he was only a sophomore.
Yeah, he was a sophomore, yeah.
I remember watching that Tennessee game when his knee just exploded into a million pieces. And, you know, he went to the NFL, but he never did much in San Francisco. And the problem was is these guys can take out insurance policies to make sure that, you know, I think Colt McCoy did one on his arm at Texas. But the problem is that they, and one play can happen like that. And your life course has changed forever.
Exactly. And get the money while it's there. I always say that because this is sports. You're not guaranteed your next game, let alone it. Maybe you're not guaranteed your next practice. You just never know. So I we're on the same page with that one. And I want to, you know, shift the tide now with you being a U of M alum. Successful year for U of M. They go 10-3, 6-2 in the Big Ten, and a bowl win over Florida. What do you think about this year?
To be honest, Michigan won the games I expected them to win. They lost the games I expected them to lose. I thought 8-4, 9-3 in Harbaugh's first year, maybe had they blown the Indiana game or blown the Minnesota game, you know, that would have been par for the course.
Right.
But the fact that he did that with Brady Hoke's kids, who, frankly, they were not playing up to their potential. But if you sprinkle in Jim Harbaugh, Jake Rudock, and a little bit of Harbaugh's quarterback magic dust, and look at what happened. I said this on the news over the weekend. If you told any Michigan fan 15 weeks ago that Jake Rudock would throw for the second most yards in program history, you would have gotten a knuckle sandwich.
I would have laughed. I would have said, what? Get out of here, right?
Exactly. But Jake Rudock is now a draftable NFL quarterback.
Unbelievable. And when you're having a few brews with your fellow U of M guys, I want to know, what is the overall perception when it comes to this year? Because, again, there's kind of a, you know, you talk about this two sides of the coin when it comes to Michigan State football's perception. But when it comes to U of M, someone will look at this year and be realistic about it. You know, 10-3, you get a bowl win, you know, and good year. While on the other side, some people will say, okay, good year, but you lost to your rivals in state, and you lost to OSU. What's the majority perception when it comes to that, when you're talking with your guys?
Well, much like the Alabama and Michigan State game, the Michigan-Ohio State game is a microcosm of showing how far apart those teams are. Mm-hmm. Because after that Michigan State loss, I will be honest, the Michigan fan me thought Michigan's going to earn a close win over OSU. These guys are ready to go to the NFL. They don't have anything to play for. Zeke Elliott rips that 64-yard run, I knew that game was over. And that was in the first quarter.
Right, right.
So when you look at it in that sense, they do need to still beat their rivals. But I think at the same time, losing to your rivals in that first year only builds that fire even more for those freshmen who are here. For Jim Harbaugh, he sends out that cryptic tweet the other day, you do reap what you sow, or
for
something
the 49ers,
like that.
Yeah, Tim Tamsula, right.
Someone put a comment on Deadspin with the video of the Jalen Watts-Jackson play, saying,
gosh,
what on earth did he reap that this is what he sowed?
Right. I like that. That's a clever take,
no,
by the way.
Yeah, it's kind of true. It's like, you know, it's like you do everything right, and then one low snap to your punter, and it's the end.
And it's done. Right.
That's what puts it into perspective, though, is that this is college football. Anything can happen. And if I remember right, as the season went on, the finishes only got crazier than that. The Watts-Jackson play kind of got put on the back burner a little bit by that Duke-Miami finish.
Oh, my goodness. What a game that was, right? A lot of controversy surrounded around that one as well.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, very, very true. All right, Jay, before we get you out of here, I'm going to transition into our next subject here on the show. Again, we are taking your calls, 517-355-9527. After this break, you'll get my thoughts on Calvin Johnson retiring. Jay, quick thoughts on that one. Possibly retiring, I should say.
I don't blame him. I mean, Calvin is a very physical receiver. He has played hard for 9 years for this team. And the fact that he played only 16 games for the first time since 2012, I think this season, that's hard to do. I mean, he's 30 years old. The NFL is more brutal than it's ever been. You've got safeties who are built like linebackers nowadays with how often they're coming down to blitz instead of dropping into coverage.
Right.
And Calvin has given his heart to Detroit. He's a high character guy, high motor guy. He has, you know, him and Matthew Stafford have been together pretty much their entire careers, and he's made Stafford look good and vice versa. But Calvin doesn't owe Detroit anything. If he wants to walk away, that's fine. And frankly, from a money standpoint, it is going to free up a lot of coin on the Lions cap, dead money aside, but I think it would free up $11 million.
It will. Actually, 11.1. Yeah, he has a $24 million cap right now. The next highest paid wide receiver in the game is only around $14 million. That's a $10 million difference.
Well, you know, the reason that happened is because him and Stafford, and Sue for that matter, all got drafted before the new CBA came in. So they were rookies getting paid bloated contracts with guaranteed money.
Right.
And the former management in Detroit, they kept doing, we'll shift it down to the next guy, kind of like a bond issue would be in terms of civic government. Mm-hmm. It's just, all right, well, you know, we'll deal with it 4 years down the road, but we're fine with Sue, Stafford, and Johnson having $50 million of our $120 million cap.
Just idiotic, right?
It is, but, you know, if Calvin leaves, he'll be warmly remembered just like Barry Sanders. There's a gold jacket waiting for him in Canton, and, you know, if he wants to walk away so he can still play with his kids outside, and, you know, I don't want to see him in a wheelchair in 15 years just because he's trying to play more. And at the same time, I'm an optimist as a Lions fan, have to be. But I think Calvin may have realized that he wasn't destined for that Jerry Rice-type career when the second year of his career, he went 0-16.
Yeah, I know, right? He had to endure that back in 2008. Jay, very good take on that, and thanks so much for joining me on the show today. Jay Sarkar, WLNS-TV 6 sports reporter and weekend anchor. Jay, how can people check you out, my man?
They can check me out on Twitter at @WLNSJSarkar, and they can also go on Facebook and like that page. And yeah, I always love interacting with viewers and fans, so yeah, keep it here. Thanks for having me on, Al.
Every weekend at 6 and 11, right?
Channel Indeed. 6.
And Sports Overtime.
Sunday nights at 11.
Sunday nights at 11:15, I think, right?
Correct.
There we go. All right, we'll be right back, folks. Again, call in 517-355-9527. We'll be right back.
Milestones and setbacks. Eric Holder looks back.
I'm not sure that race drove Congress to put in place those draconian drug sentencing laws, but I certainly know that as we look back at it now, there is certainly a racial component to it.
The former AG on racial justice and financial injustice. Next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International.
The Takeaway, today at 3 on AM 870 WKAR.
For years, Kate Blanchett was signed on to star in the movie Carol. It's a complex love story between two women set in the 1950s, and it's based on Patricia Highsmith's novel, first published as The Price of Salt.
It's the slippery sexuality and morality that is so attractive, I think.
Kate Blanchett on Playing Carol later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered today at 4 on 90.5 WKAR.
Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Again, folks, happy, happy Thursday. It is January 7th, 2016, and we have just under 10 minutes left in the show. And I want to close out today's show by, of course, talking about Calvin Megatron Johnson, a player who is certainly beloved and has been ever since he has donned the Honolulu blue jersey. And, you know, there's a lot of talk surrounding Calvin as he moves forward in his career. He has just completed his ninth season as an NFL baller for the Detroit Lions, and he is now contemplating retirement. A source told ESPN's Ed Werder that Johnson warned his mother a few days ago that he wasn't sure if he'll continue to play. He is 30 years old. Again, he played at Georgia Tech, drafted second overall in 2007. And there was even, you know, there were even talks about what would Detroit do with Calvin Johnson after this season was said and done, seeing as though he's taken up so much cap room, for this team. Again, as I mentioned before we hit that that second break, he's getting paid right now $24 million. That's his cap. The next highest paid wide receiver in the NFL is around $14 million. He has four more years left on that contract that, again, should be restructured to free up more room for other players on this team. And if Calvin decides to retire, it would save the Lions $11.1 million against the cap. Really bad timing for this discussion when concerning Calvin Johnson and a possible retirement, seeing as though the Lions are right now trying to hire a general manager. There's question marks right now as to who is going to be the manager in the D of the Lions. So you have that sideshow going on, and now this conversation about Calvin Johnson's future in Detroit. And again, he's had ankle and knee injuries, and when you look at what he's done, I mean, an incredible career, even just up to this point alone. He holds the single-season record for receiving yards with 11,619, six straight 1,000-yard seasons, and selected to this season's Pro Bowl, the sixth of his career, three-time All-Pro pick, number 22 all-time in receiving touchdowns with 83, holds almost every significant Lions receiving record. So the question is, why hang it up at this point? Concern with health? Yeah, I can certainly see that, because we all know in the most recent years of Calvin Johnson's stint as a Lion, he has not been healthy. Again, ankle and knee injuries have certainly, you know, honed him. And it's so funny. I put this on my Facebook page, you know, about when I first heard the news about Calvin Johnson considering retirement. I had a lot of people weigh in, a ton of people. I won't read all the comments, but I'll just say that many of them commented on two things. One being the concerns of today's modern day football player when it comes to concussions, which I can definitely see without a doubt. I saw Will Smith's concussion movie over the holiday break, and man, was that alarming or what? And number two, comparisons to Calvin Johnson's career to that of Barry Sanders. Yeah, we all know Barry Sanders. Barry was the man. Third pick of the 1989 draft, made the playoffs five times in the 90s, in 91, 93, 94, 95, 97. In 1991 and 1993, the Lions won the NFC Central Division title, and in 91, oh, was this a great year or what? The Lions won 12 regular season games. Why did Barry leave? You know, I mean, he was such a great player, but his retirement came somewhat unexpectedly and was really a matter of controversy. 2 years earlier, before he retired, Sanders had renewed his contract with the Lions for $35.4 million over 6 years with an $11 million signing bonus. The Lions demanded that he return $5.5 million of the bonus. Barry said, no, I'm not doing that. And guess what the Lions did? They sued. On February 15th, 2000, an arbitrator ruled that Sanders had to immediately repay $1.83 million, a sixth of the bonus, with the remaining bonus to be repaid over each of the 3 years Sanders had left on the contract provided and he stayed retired. Before the ruling, Sanders offered to pay back the entire $5.5 million in return for his release from the team. The Lions refused, stating that they would welcome Sanders back to the team. Otherwise, they would honor his announced retirement. Was that Oogle or what? I'm just hoping. Again, we're talking about Moolah here. That's the reason that Barry said, you know what? I'm done with this. We have yet to yet to grace a Super Bowl. We've yet to win one. I'm done. Now we have issues with my money. I'm out. Deuces. I'm just hoping we don't see the same happen to Calvin Megatron Johnson, because we do know that this $24 million price tag hanging over his head has to be restructured. The Lions want to restructure that. But will Calvin give up the money? And if so, will he decide that 9 years is enough? We will continue that conversation on tomorrow's Current Sports. But in the meantime, remember, don't forget to watch Current Sports TV tonight at 10:30 p.m. on WKAR-TV as I chat with former Michigan State running back from 2009, to 2011. Edwin Baker. It was a fantastic chat with him, folks. You don't want to miss it. We also get to see footage from what we shot out in Dallas, Texas at the Cotton Bowl. Going to be a fun episode. Much thanks to Drew Hill, who held it down tonight. Much thanks to Drew Hill for engineering today's show. And also, much thanks to all of you out there for tuning in. And Jay Sarkar of WLNS-TV6 for coming in. Was he great or what? You have been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR, AM 870 East Lansing. Take care, have one fantastic afternoon, and be easy, people.